to the last case of the day, and that is 093719, Nona Ray versus the City of Chicago. And good morning, Mr. Flaxman.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. This is a civil rights case. The plaintiff was driving a car with their headlights off at night, was stopped by a police officer, and was given a ticket. The complaint alleges that the officer or his partner planted drugs in the car and then detained Ms. Ray for the drug case. She was held overnight and released the next morning when a judge set bond. Then she returned to court in a couple of weeks, and the case was dismissed. The district judge agreed that, well, if she was driving her car with her lights off, there's no Fourth Amendment violation when a police officer puts heroin in her car and then detains her, imprisons her for the framed offense. That can't be right. District judge, I think it's page 3 to 4, said
they had probable cause for the traffic stop.
If there's probable cause for the traffic stop, the case is over. I think that's what they said. Am I reading it wrong, Your Honor? I think if there's probable cause to arrest somebody for traffic, you can plant drugs in their car.
No, that's not what the judge said.
Well, if there's no constitutional violation if you plant drugs in your car.
I'm not going to drive anymore. Okay, that's it.
It doesn't happen to white people, Judge. It happens in the – Ms. Ray is not white, and her nephew wasn't white, and she was imprisoned because the cop put drugs in her car.
Well, she changed her story. Originally, she said it was her companion that put drugs.
She didn't say that. That's her testimony. Her testimony wasn't exactly that. Viewed in the light most favorable to the city, that was her. That's the way you could read her testimony at the administrative hearing. Administrative hearing transcript. We were not. As a tactical decision, we weren't going to tell the hearing officer, who's not a judge, who's a $75 an hour employee of the city of Chicago, that one of Chicago's finest framed a citizen. The hearing officer, the city employee, would be angry at me for suggesting that. He works for the city. He officers are his friends.
Is she didn't tell the same story until she got around this lawsuit.
Yeah. Right?
She didn't tell the story that she was framed because that would tactically have been disadvantageous.
Well, I don't know why she didn't, but she didn't.
Because she would have been killed at the administrative hearing. She would have had no chance to win. She didn't say her nephew had it. She said, I didn't have it, and I don't know if he had it.
No,
but
she said it must have been him. I didn't have it, so yeah. It must have been him.
Well, we weren't going to say that the police must have been the police officer who framed it, because that's suicide in this kind of a hearing.
Why is she so set on keeping the transcript from the administrative hearing out of the record?
Whenever I try to submit something in a reply brief, I'm told it's waived. You can't come with new arguments or new facts. And I think that rule should be applied to everyone. It should be applied especially to the city of Chicago, who had a – this wasn't a public record, this transcript. The transcript had to be ordered, had to be transcribed, and then was submitted with their reply brief. It should have been as part of their answer in an administrative complaint. It should not have been in a reply brief. It shouldn't have been sandbagged.
Well, how can we determine whether the finding of guilt was arbitrary and unreasonable if there's no transcript in the record?
That should not be before this court or the district court on a Rule 12b-6 or 12b-7 motion. We weren't at issue. We had an answer hadn't been filed. A motion to dismiss had been filed. We responded to the motion to dismiss, and then they filed a reply. We were saying, here's all this evidence, and we want you to consider.
Mr. Flaxman, forgive me, but, you know, the administrative record is entitled to judicial notice, notwithstanding the fact, you know, that it was attached to the reply brief in the district court. And she can hardly be – I mean, she certainly can't claim to be surprised by its context. She's the one that was at the hearing and mounted a defense to the charges.
what she's surprised at is the willingness of the district judge and apparently some members of this panel to disregard the ordinary procedure that you don't submit new evidence in a reply brief.
Telling you that it's entitled to judicial notice.
Then there should have been a motion to take judicial notice, and I should have had been invited, requested, required to respond to it. It shouldn't have been thrown up in a reply brief. It's hard enough to win these cases when the law is against me, but when the facts are against me and the rules keep changing and the defendants are allowed to come in with transcripts in the reply brief and say, here, we win, here's the transcript, and I don't have I don't have an opportunity, not ordered to reply to answer that, that shouldn't be allowed. The district judge, if that's the situation, said, oh, well, okay, I'm going to consider it. You reply to it, Mr. Fox, when you have a week to do that. But he didn't do that.
Did you ask for a surreply?
No, I did not ask for a surreply. And the rule in this court is real clear that you don't have to do that. You don't have to keep asking for surreplies and surreplies. There's a motion, a memo, a response, a reply, and that's it. The defendant shouldn't be allowed to add new facts on a Rule 12b-6 motion. They were converting it into a motion for summary judgment without notice, without an opportunity to respond. I'm appalled that Your Honor is let me step back. I didn't mean to say that. I apologize. I'm troubled that there's sympathy for that argument from the city, which is really outrageous and should not be tolerated. It should be sanctioned. That transcript should have been stricken. The district judge should have said, I'm not going to consider it. You filed it too late. File that with your opening memo. If you want to file a new motion, do that and attach the transcript. Don't try to sneak it in here on your reply. That's fairness, Judge. And it's just as unfair as framing Ms. Ray for drugs or saying that.
Back to that. I think we've exhausted the hearing business. We understand your position.
Okay. Getting back to the complaint alleges that she didn't have drugs. The officer didn't have any reason to believe that they were her drugs, but caused her to be held for those drugs. And she was held, instead of being released with a traffic ticket by posting bond on her valid driver's license, she was taken to the police station, fingerprinted, held overnight, and had to see a judge and post bond. That 12 hours of detention is unreasonable in these circumstances.
Can I ask you this? Since you failed to argue at the administrative hearing that the Illinois statute is unconstitutional, should you be allowed to advance the claim here?
Yes, because you can't raise constitutional arguments at those administrative hearings. The rules of the administrative hearings that the hearing officer is limited to the facts, he can't make legal decisions, and we couldn't raise anything there. We're dealing not with the judge, we're dealing with an employee of the city who makes factual determinations under very narrowly circumscribed rules.
You know, I was wondering why you sued only Officer Malinowski in his individual capacity, because your complaint does allege that it was either Officer Malinowski or his partner who planted the drugs. So are there specific facts that implicate him more than the partner?
No, I didn't have his partner's name, and when I discovered his name, I would have added his name and joined him, sought to join him as a defendant. That was the strategy. That's why I didn't name him. I apologize for it.
No. I love you, Mr. Flaxman. You know that. Okay, come on up, Ms. Hornstra. I don't know you, but I love you. Just so the record is clear.
Thank you, Judge Roebner, and may it please the Court. This Court should not reverse a district court's decision to dismiss a lawsuit based on an argument and a legal theory that was never presented to the district court. And this notion that Mr. Flaxman is now arguing that this case doesn't challenge the fact of a custodial arrest, that it's really just about the amount of time that Ms. Ray was detained, simply wasn't put before the district court. I think Mr. Flaxman seriously mischaracterizes the district court's approach to this case. What was presented to the district court was a claim that all the officer could legally do for what it's undisputed there was probable cause for, which was driving at night without headlights. The theory was all an officer can do there is stop me and give me a traffic ticket. And the theory behind this Fourth Amendment claim was being taken to the police station and held for any amount of time at the police station violates the Fourth Amendment. There was no claim that the amount of time was unreasonably wrong. I mean, now I heard Mr. Flaxman say 12 hours. We hear overnight. What was said in the district court in the complaint was full custodial arrest. What was said in response to the motion to dismiss was took me to the station and I was held for several hours. All that said was basically you can't take me to the station. And that's the theory that was presented to the district court. At this point, Mr. Flaxman, I think, recognizing that under Atwater and Devenpeck, the arguments he made in the district court aren't going to get him anywhere, has a new theory. This isn't, you know, a minor matter of waiver. This is something that the touchstone for waiver, what it should turn on, is if the district court had an opportunity to consider and rule on the theory that the plaintiff is putting forward. And I know Mr. Flaxman says this case was over. The district court thought it was over as soon as there was probable cause. You can't complain about anything. That's not how Judge Daigle approached this. And a district court and defendants shouldn't be expected to read between the lines of complaint and response to a motion to dismiss to figure out if there's something there that the plaintiff's not making an argument about. I mean, there are actually other things in the complaint. She could have complained about the seizure of her car. She could have complained about the search. It's not a basis to say I'm not going to dismiss the complaint because you might have something there you didn't argue about. The purpose of a motion to dismiss and responding to it is to get to bring your theories up.
Why does her failure to raise a constitutional challenge to Illinois' impoundment ordinance at the hearing bar her from mounting a facial as opposed to as applied challenge in federal court to the constitutionality of the statute?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. I mean, of course, are you asking why she can't raise a facial challenge? I'm sorry if I missed the question. You said why does that bar her from bringing an as-applied challenge as opposed to a facial challenge?
Right. Well, from mounting a facial as opposed to an as-applied.
Well, I think for one thing, to show injury, she might have to show that it was clear that she couldn't succeed on that defense. But maybe she's not barred from raising a facial challenge, but it's actually meritless because there's nothing on the face of the statute that precludes someone from saying drugs were planted. This court has approved the ordinance doesn't require that the person who's held liable be personally responsible for the drugs. This court has said that that's constitutional. And I mean, I don't disagree with Mr. Flaxman that it would be unconstitutional if a hearing officer said, oh, you said drugs are planted in your car? I don't care. You're strictly liable. But that's not what the statute says. I mean, of course, there's no express defense listed that you can raise that as a defense. But it was necessary to raise that defense to give the hearing officer a chance to rule on it. And as for Mr. Flaxman's contention that it wasn't raised as a tactical matter, if that's true, it doesn't matter. You have to raise these things to challenge them. But looking at the transcript, my reading of it is that Mr. Flaxman thought that it was a defense that the person who was held liable wasn't personally responsible. I mean, in the hearing he said that can't be right. I maybe wasn't aware of Towers versus City of Chicago that says it is. But I think that was the theory there. And certainly it's offensive to say that you think you're going to get thrown out if you accuse a police officer at a Department Administrative Hearings officer of doing something wrong, and that's a tactical reason not to do it.
Is there any information in the record regarding why the criminal charge against her was dropped?
No.
No.
Oh, none at all. And just to touch briefly on the issue of the transcript, I think we explained well in our brief, but I certainly take exception to the idea that there was anything improper about putting it in the reply brief. The reason nothing about what happened to DOAH was raised. The posture was the complaint said the ordinance is unconstitutional. The city's response to the motion to dismiss said, just saying something's unconstitutional, we don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? And so it was in the reply that, for the first time, Ms. Ray said that it was because she couldn't raise a defense that the drugs were framed. And certainly the city wouldn't have had reason to know that that's what she was talking about because that defense wasn't raised at the administrative hearing. And so the transcript was attached to the reply. I don't even think it would have been necessary, for purposes of pointing out that that defense wasn't raised, it might not have been necessary to have the transcript. It might have been enough to say she doesn't plead, she doesn't say that she raised it, and if she's making an as-applied challenge, she needs to explain that she raised that. But as Your Honor pointed out, it was a judicially noticeable document, and the posture was there was no sandbagging here. And I really take exception to that. And the reply brief says, you know, the only defense that we made to it was to say that they could have, that he could have filed a reply, surreply, and that wasn't the. I mean, we explained that there was a good reason for it, and of course, if something is improperly made in a reply, you don't have to file a surreply to complain about it. But in this posture, it certainly would have been appropriate if Ms. Ray thought she had something to say that she could have moved to strike it. And there was just a perfectly good reason for it, and it made sense for the district court to consider it. And had this been pursued, it's a little bit procedurally unusual. I mean, the International College of Surgeons says that these administrative review claims can be heard in federal court. Usually the way it works in state court is it gets filed, and the response that's filed by the Department of Administrative Hearings is the record of proceedings. And as Your Honor pointed out, you wouldn't go anywhere on the claim if you didn't have the transcript. I understand it's a 12B6 motion, but there was just nothing unusual or inappropriate about it having considered there. And I would just, again, repeat that this we certainly don't – this isn't about technical pleading rules. With regard to this false imprisonment extended detention, this isn't a matter of expecting Ms. Ray to, you know, plead legal theories or detailed facts in her complaint. But the way this case was presented to the district court was there's a Fourth Amendment violation if I was taken in to the station. We're not saying that you can't complain about having drugs planted on you. Certainly, Ms. Ray could have brought a malicious prosecution claim. There may be other theories, but this is a 1983 claim. If she, you know, needs to tie what happened to a constitutional violation. Being charged with a criminal offense isn't a constitutional violation. Being taken to the police station, being held for a while, isn't a constitutional violation if there was probable cause for it. And having been given that explanation for why there was no claim in the district court wasn't obligated to spend further time on this case. And it would, I think, be an insult to judicial economy to say now the district court has to consider this case on a new theory. And so we'd ask the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Mr. Flaxman, come on up. How much time? Take two.
At the short appendix 4, note 1, which the district court opinion, the district judge recognizes that plaintiff was raising, states that she has a Fourth Amendment false imprisonment claim. And the district judge said, I'm not going to consider it because it wasn't pleaded with specificity. It is about technical rules of pleading. We pleaded the facts of what happened to her. And the city argued that if you're arrested, you don't have your headlights on, the case is over. We argued the false imprisonment theory that's asserted here, and the district judge said, I'm not going to consider it. That's not technical pleading. That's that should have been considered, and that states a claim. The other thing that's in this case that the district judge adjudicated the merits of the administrative review claim on the basis of his independent review of the transcript. Oh, he dismissed it. I read it with prejudice. Didn't dismiss it for want of ancillary jurisdiction. Said go refile in state court, which is really we could have done if he'd done that. The case should be relief for the appellant.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both. Thank you so much. And the case will be taken under advisement. And don't worry about any.